2015, Thomas. She coming to a close. You know what that means. It's Game of the Year on Tom and Matt Attack.
Oh, yes, it is. So it's come to this again, this time of the year, and this is where we look back on 2015 and think, hang on, I didn't really play many new releases.
It's like, shit, almost as if having a Game Boy YouTube channel has taken up most of my time playing old games. Funny that.
I did, however, purchase a few games this year, and I have to say I've been thoroughly impressed by quite a few of them, and they feature heavily in my votes here.
Well, playing off my rather controversial thing of last year of not awarding a Game of the Year to anything because
did you do that?
I did.
I have a vague recollection of that.
Because yeah. I had no games that I really, really liked from 2014.
But now you can't.
And now I couldn't decide. There's like three or four really fucking good games. But there's also like five or six really good games that I probably should have played if there were infinite time and space and monies.
More than me. And how can anyone play that many games in 1 year?
I did 52. I beat 52 games.
Did,
I beat a game a week.
Do you know how many games I beat this year?
None.
Not. Yes, actually. You could argue I beat maybe one at least.
What's that?
I can't tell you because it will spoil the surprise
later. Okay. Well, should we do a rundown of the categories?
Yeah, okay. So we had a little bit of discussion as to what categories would be best. These are different from last year, I think.
Yeah, we did a lot of genre-based stuff last year as well. Like it was like best platformer, best shooter and all this.
Then we get to a point where maybe not both of us haven't played a game of that genre. For example, best racing game. I doubt Matt's played a racing game this year.
Probably haven't. I guess you count Rocket League because you're driving cars.
Game.
But no, so I'm screwed on that category. I doubt you've played... Like, I wanted best story in this and you were like, I haven't got a clue. So I had to take it out. So yeah, the categories
actually, I have got one for best story.
Are you son of a bitch? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, maybe we'll throw it in as a curveball right at the end. Yep. So I've now got
to
think.
Thought then. Right. I think in the only game I play through to the end.
Okay, cool in the gang. Right, okay. The categories are best visuals, best soundtrack, best digital-only game, because download-only doesn't really make sense anymore. So we'd be like, how does that work? Digital-only is now the category for things that would have won last year, or games like Limbo and such that are released in a digital capacity rather than on a physical disc. Even though I think Limbo did get a disc in the end, so that doesn't count. Best shoulda, coulda, played, which is the games...
A new category this year.
As Thomas and I have both said, we didn't really have any time to play everything that was massively released this year, and this is the category we'd like to put something in that we think that we would have played and enjoyed. Best original game. The definition of original has not been defined, so it'll be interesting to see what
we
come up with
there. What I'd like to define it as is something which is a new concept for a video game. Well, not, maybe not on every level, but at least on some levels, it does something in a very original way. And you might say, I've never seen that before. What a good idea that is.
I'd be very interested to see if ours is the same for that category.
Okay.
Best multiplayer. And now throwing in right at the end, where I've got to think a bit throughout this entire podcast, best story. Then we will wrap up, as we usually do, with best portable title before we do best console, which I guess is more best game of the year.
I realise as we go through this, there's no kind of best gameplay category. But let's say when we do best console game or best portable game, gameplay is obviously a rather large factor.
I have taken that into consideration in my thing. Yeah. I was thinking most fun should be one, but I would argue the game of the year should be perhaps the most fun.
Mine's an interesting one, And then most fun... Yeah.
I've scribbled mine out a couple of times. I had to sit
mine may
there
be controversial, but
and deeply think about what I wanted, and then sat there again and scribbled it out, and then wrote another one and scribbled it out, and then put the first one back and then scribbled that out. It's been a bit of a clusterfuck of what my best game of the year is. But yeah, we should just kick it off.
Let's just do that.
Yes. Right then. Best visuals, Thomas Parry, take us away.
Okay. Yoshi's Woolly World.
I think we are both unanimous. Yoshi's Woolly World
is
also mine.
It's the only game this year that's made me go, whoa, look at that. Oh my God, look at that.
I really, really that's like nice. Both Bloodborne and I really, really like Battlefront. Yeah. That game is
there's been
hella pretty.
Lots of great looking games this year. Battlefront, yes, is... I'd actually completely forgotten about Battlefront.
I was quite surprised. I thought that was going to be your entry.
I'd say Battlefront could potentially be a runner-up in that category for me.
Battlefront for me is the game where I've literally died because I've been looking at walls and going like, wow, shit, this looks like a real wall. And I mean, especially when you see all those crazy light-in PC mods you can get for that game.
Woolly World had the edge for me, though, because it was more delightful. It was the use of the visuals.
Yeah.
Because they actually helped influence the feel of the gameplay, I felt, as well. It's very soft, it's very bouncy, it's very... It was the visuals and the gameplay combined, I think. So the visuals were very important in this particular sense.
It makes the game... let's be honest here, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Yoshi's Woolly World is essentially Kirby's Epic Yarn mashed into
Yoshi's
Island.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, the gameplay is very familiar, as with most Nintendo titles. But those visuals, they go beyond Epic Yarn. Like, me and my girlfriend started playing Epic Yarn after we'd beaten Woolly World. For gamers out there who are in couples who are trying to convince their partner maybe to play games with them, Woolly World is a good place to start. It is a very fun game to play as a couple. I know a lot of people who have, and their partners have enjoyed it, even if they're not necessarily that into video games. Mm. But we played Epic Yarn. We put it in, and like the visuals... in that game, a night and day. It's so refined. It's so the world is not just like, oh, it's just yarn. It the physical objects made
also,
out of crochet, and
so
it looks
soft,
beautiful,
don't they? And light. You can feel the lightness of it all as you play it.
The weight of everything as well. Like you landing on things and just like, you know, they're being like little dimples in the ground and stuff. It's beautiful.
Also, the graphics are so unique. They couldn't make an amiibo out of just plastic.
No, they couldn't. they physically made the Woolly Amiibo, which is actually what inspired the entire project, it turns out.
Yes, I remember that.
These original Woolly designs that the lady that I can't remember the name of for the life of me made during Epic Yarn. She made Woolly Yoshis because she thought it would be adorable.
Yeah, so
and
it's
then
only
they,
fitting.
Yeah, and then they made it into a video game because they looked so nice. And it shows there's a lot of love, there's care and attention put into that. And it's a fantastic game.
Yeah. I bet I'm just... Battlefront does look really, really pretty. But
I
feel that
like
Yoshi
a photo.
Is more creative.
Yeah.
Visually speaking.
I kind of also want to throw a shout out to Splatoon. Mm-hmm. Because Splatoon has
I did think about Splatoon when I was
very unique visual style. I mean, you look at that game, it's very loud. I've heard on other podcasts and other people describe it almost as if a Sega Dreamcast game had been kept in hibernation and then released on the Wii U. It's kind of got that weird kind of like 2000-something visual style to it, but it feels very fresh.
There's a lot of very good things about Splatoon, and maybe we'll mention it again within this podcast.
I think this is one of the only games I've ever given a shit about what my character looked like in it, because there's just so many like fun items and so many cool-looking guns and stuff that you're like, wow, but your visual aesthetic comes into how you want to play that game.
Shall we move on? There's plenty of other good-looking games this year, but those are the ones that we...
I think
out.
They're the ones that are at the top of my list. Like I said, Bloodborne looks amazing. Some of those like Victorian Gothic architectures and stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes how the light catches things just looks amazing. Some of the creature design is also fantastic. But
we're agreed the Tom and Matt Attack best visuals of the year go to Yoshi's Woolly World.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Best music is the next category.
Best music.
What have you got, Matt? You can go first this time.
I'm quite surprised you didn't actually pick up on it when I was making the pre-podcast cup of tea. My best soundtrack, licensed and unlicensed, goes to Metal Gear Solid V: The Phantom Pain.
You're very good there. I didn't even think of that, but yes, it is a good soundtrack.
It has to. I mean, like, even just
the use
the
of existing music
keeps getting in my head anytime I think of that game. But I mean, like,
as well.
Me walking around that game world, throwing things up on the balloons, and then just like listening to Rebel Yell and stuff. And
I've played so little of the game, I'm not sure exactly how much music's in there. I just listened to The Man of Soda World.
Of course it is. It's the midget version of that.
Cover. Which, upon first hearing of that, I was like, this feels very... I wasn't aware this was Midior cover.
Yeah.
Very modern, very contemporary. This is great. Really great choice of music. Oh my gosh, it was a cover done years back by Midior. That was quite a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's other things as well. There's Maneater is on the soundtrack. Kids in America is on the soundtrack. It's just a great selection of music. Apparently, Friday I'm in Love's on the soundtrack, which wasn't actually released at the time the game apparently takes place. So maybe they wanted another Cure song and the Cure wouldn't let them have a one from that time period or something. Who knows? Okay. But I don't really care. It doesn't break the immersion because I like that song.
No, it's a good song regardless of when it was released. What about the original soundtrack? You say that's...
Yeah.
I mean, I've played so little, I can't quite remember it. So.
Well, I mean, like, you've played past Metal Gear games. The Metal Gear soundtracks are generally pretty damn spectacular.
It's like a feature film soundtrack, isn't it?
Yeah, but like I said,
the atmosphere. I think, yes, it has a very strong atmosphere, and I think in part that music is so important for creating the atmosphere within the game.
As I said, every time you hear that whoa music, I think I do feel
it coming back to me now, yeah. I need to play that game. Come to that later.
Oh, man, that's such a good game. Yeah.
So my best music is actually the aforementioned Splatoon.
Yeah, you're probably right there. It's got a good soundtrack.
Because, again, it's such a big part of the feel of the game, the immersion of the game, and the atmosphere and joy of Splatoon.
Yeah.
I think a big factor of that is the soundtrack.
Yes.
It is very upbeat and quite unique. And I think I use one word to describe it would be colourful. It's a very colourful soundtrack.
It is. It goes a lot of places that a lot of other games wouldn't. I mean, like, how voice is used in there as well. That
It just gets you really pumped up for the game.
Yes.
It does exactly what it should do. And it adds to the uniqueness of Splatoon.
I would like to throw a shout out on a notation of a good game with a good soundtrack, and that's Axiom Verge. Axiom Verge's soundtrack is actually something pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
I'll just play you this track, and I hope it's the one I'm thinking of.
A quick snippet.
A quick snippet of this track. But it does some interesting things. It's very ominous and very, like, gets you in the Metroid-y mood, which the game should.
Ooh, I like that.
But it's got this constant beat, and like when you're running around shooting stuff, it's just kind of this constant build.
If we
want
to make a very intimidating podcast, we keep this on in the background.
We would, yeah, while we're talking about this, but we won't. But
ooh.
It's got different levels to it.
I do like it. I do like that mix.
Fantastic soundtrack.
Actually, another game which I've heard has a very good soundtrack is Everybody's Gone to Rapture. Everyone's Gone to Rapture.
Everyone's Gone to the Rapture. Yeah.
I've heard very good things about the game soundtrack. It's one of the things that make me want to play that game.
Yeah.
But let's move on, shall we?
Okay.
Matt's there was Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain.
Yes.
And mine was Splatoon.
Splatoon.
Next category.
Is best digital-only game.
Ooh.
Funny I should mention Axiom Verge, Tom.
Oh.
Because Axiom Verge is actually my best digital-only game of the year. There are a few more notable mentions. I did play Darius Burst, which I quite liked. A very expensive game, though, which kind of factored into my decision maybe to give it to Axiom. There was also a roguelike shooter I played that was only on PC called Sylphseed, which is very, very good. You play a level, you kill random bosses, you can have one of four random bosses at certain points, and then you get to take a power-up over to the next level, kind of the R-type gun system where they evolve by picking up more things. Very good game. It's on Xbox One and PC. I played it with an Xbox 360 controller on the computer, though, because it's impossible to play a bullet hell-esque shooter with a keyboard, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But Axiom Verge definitely did it for me. It was this whole... I like games like Super Metroid, and I mean, this is probably the best Metroid game I've played in years since Super Metroid or Metroid Fusion, which I also really liked. But it's just this idea of glitching through screens and the weapon variety in the gameplay, and there's actually quite a good story mixed in there as well, so I really enjoyed it.
I mean, right, I've not played it. I can't.
Obviously, there's other good titles as well. There's things like Rocket League came out this year, which was also a fantastic game. I really like King's Quest, because technically that's digital only at the moment because it hasn't got a box. But for me, it was Axiom Verge. Okay. I think I've not had a game like that that's sort of kind of trying to aim for this whole nostalgia kick that's and actually that managed well, to keep yeah. me gripped and to do it to the level or even better than Nintendo's own endeavours. Sip that tea, boy, and then tell me what you think.
We don't need me to tell you, but I'm going to tell our listeners here, because you already know this. My digital-only release of the year would be the fantastic Roundabout.
Yes, I knew it would be. surprise, now, surprise.
So I'm going to have to explain what Roundabout is. I've done it before on the podcast.
You have? I know what it is because of that.
You deliver people. It's a top-down view. Imagine Grand Theft Auto. You're driving a limousine that is constantly revolving. You have to drive the people you pick up. It's a bit like Crazy Taxi,
yeah.
I guess, to the places they need to go. But, well, driving a vehicle which is constantly spinning, and it's long. And if you imagine a game like Kurin,
yeah.
Yeah. That's right, isn't it?
Kurin, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very similar concept.
Yeah.
And there have been other games that have done this before, I think. But Roundabout surprised me. I think it stood out for me mostly because it used live-action cutscenes.
FMV, yes.
Should I say. Yes. Which immediately made it stand out. And it had a sense of humour.
Yes.
And that what sets it apart from a lot of games. A lot of games don't have a great sense of humour, and this really nailed it. This was really its own beast, and the FMV sequences helped that. But it's effortlessly playable. It's a game, it's got a story mode, which I played through.
Yeah.
And so I can say this is a game that I did complete this year, and that's a satisfying experience. There's little challenges along the way as well. It's not just delivering people from place to place. You do play little mini games during the story mode. And there's several different cities as well that you travel through.
Yeah.
But it's so playable. And I did there's a speedrun mode, try and complete the game in as fast as time as you can. And that's a great challenge as well. I did quite well in terms of the rankings, I think.
Yes.
But some people are especially skilled at that. Yeah. So, in short, Roundabout, great game. You may not have heard of it or given it a go. I urge you to, because it's one of the best experiences I've had with a digital game this year.
Made by a small indie studio from the States called No Goblin.
Yeah.
I just wanted to double check it before I said it, but an upcoming title by them you may have heard of if you watch the PlayStation Experience is 100 Foot Robot Golf. They're making that.
Wow. You see, they have the best concepts.
They do, yeah. I mean, who doesn't want 100 Foot Robots playing golf? I mean,
also, the voiceover's great. Because on the characters, the main character doesn't speak, who drives the limo.
Yeah.
Giorgio. And you know, it's a female lead as well, you know?
Yeah.
A strong female lead in a video game. And the variety of passengers that she takes around is great. And there's a love story running through the game as well, which is a nice little touch.
Okay. Cool. Then I guess we go on to already, but we're making pretty good time with this podcast. Yeah. Best shoulda, coulda played.
Oh, I like this category.
I actually have three nominations for this category of games I wish I would have played. I have four technically. I mean, I could have played Xenoblade Chronicles X, which is on my two playlist, but the size and scale of that game still intimidates me after playing so many hearty games this year that took 50, 60 hours.
I like that. Hearty games. It's like a hearty Italian at Subway.
It's like a good meal, you know. You play that game through to the end and then you're there and you're just on the couch going like, oof, I'm a bit of a mess. Oof. Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Getting a bit hot on the collar.
It's also the reason why I haven't played the game that is my best shoulda, coulda played. But there's also... I really, really, and it's kind of what pipped it from being my best digital-only game, if I'm being honest. I didn't beat Undertale. I played the first hour and a half of that game. I really enjoyed it. I still have this weird disconnect of playing a game at a PC that kind of meant that once I'd went away from that the first time after I talked about it on Atom Attack last year, I didn't go back and play it. Mm. I really need to. I really, really need to make time for it because I've heard it's fantastic and I really liked what I played of it. Also, Soma, I hear the soundtrack's great, but I'm really shit at like survival-y horror first person, like, oh my god, you need to run and be stealthy games, which is why I'm terrible at Alien Isolation. But my best shoulda, coulda, woulda played game is The Witcher 3. I feel the story is absolutely fantastic, like Soma. However, I think the reason I haven't really picked it up is because it hasn't gone down in price yet. Studio Red, I forgot what they're called, the people who made the game, a Polish developer, generally got a very high bar of making quality. These open world games with a very high quality. And it seems a very daunting task, but their writing apparently is impeccable in this game, which is why I want to play. I really like fantasy settings. I said to people, I don't really like Bethesda games, which is why Fallout 4 won't appear on any of my list. Sorry for spoilers and disappointing you all. But I've said it to a few people now, like, if I don't like Bethesda games, will I like The Witcher? And they've said, no, it's nothing related. Only it's in an open world. So I really want to go and play it. It seems a bit daunting, but it will definitely be a title I pick up in 2016 and play through sporadically.
I think it's a game I'd like to watch someone play.
Yeah, kind of. But I mean, it's another whopper of a game. It's another hearty game, as I've pitched the term, of like 60 hours, maybe. Mm. I mean, if you play it through on easy and you skip all of the like side quests and stuff, but then maybe you're not getting the full experience.
I am intrigued at how good the characters and the writing might be, because there's very few instances where I've played a game where I've thought really connected with the characters or thought the writing was of a very high standard. I think Uncharted's a good example of a very well-written game with likeable characters. Agree. But nice choice.
I've heard there's sequences where like the writing makes you feel things for characters.
That's great.
And the writing makes you angry at things that happen to these characters, and you feel a real emotional connection with some events and some of the situations that some characters have found themselves in, and you feel so sorry for these people, but they're in this thing. Like, this world happens. This world is a cruel place. Like,
believe it or not, I've had that experience with, what's it called? Force Unleashed 2, believe it or not.
Yeah, really?
I actually thought the writing was pretty good in that. I think the direction of it as well, it hit the right buttons at the end.
Yeah.
That story. It was a pretty short story.
Yeah, it was a pretty short game, actually.
But, it hit the buttons, as I say.
Okay.
I picked Metal Gear Solid 5, as you might have guessed.
Yes, I assume you would.
Because I've been tantalised by this game, because I've played it for maybe 2-3 hours. So I've played a little bit of the game. So I can testify to its quality. And I think that initial introduction, the prologue sequence, really grabs you and throws you in. It's very exciting, and it's very interesting how it plays out.
Yeah.
You really feel immersed in it, very cinematic. So, it's always a game I think about going back to, because I have very fond memories of the short time I did spend with it.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at sitting for long periods of time and playing a game. I think I really just need to say, this afternoon or whatever, I'm going to devote to this game.
And it's a very demanding game. Yeah. Like, it is very long. I mean, you know, God, to get that true ending, I had to spend at least 60 hours playing that game. It's a very long game. I had to just sit there and play it because I was afraid of spoilers. I knew it would be the last game in a series that I really love. And I wasn't prepared to have it spoiled, though. Maybe it's not my thing for best story, let's say.
Yeah. I've heard mixed things about the story as well. Other games I think I would have liked to have played this year, just briefly mention. Despite what I've heard about Mad Max, I would still like to play it.
I'd still like to give it a go.
Because I like Mad Max. Also, again, everybody's gone to Rapture. I'm very interested in. And I like to try Batman, but the reason I've not gone for Batman Arkham Knight is because I've not finished Arkham City yet. But I have to say, my time with it, I very much enjoyed. But no point you know, start get another one until I finish that one.
I beat City. I never played Origins. I just kind of, it was too late for me, you know? Like, I played, there seems to be diminishing terms on the Arkham games. Like, I really, really liked Arkham Asylum. If we were doing a podcast at that time, that would have been my game of the year.
Yeah. Do you feel that maybe they haven't progressed so much?
I just didn't, I don't know. I think taking it out of the Arkham setting, it was almost like a survival horror game with Batman. It was fucking brilliant. And then it becomes like a, collect-a-thon. And
when it opened up
fly
in
around,
city.
Yeah, it kind of just, it gets more focused on things like Riddler trophies and all of this kind of stuff. I'm just like, I just want to be in this world. I just want to be in this thing and have a set A to B, but then explore that.
I've heard very good things about the game story.
Yeah, so have I. Agreed. It's one of the ones that's on there for me. I also really wish I could have played some SteamWorld Heist. That is on my list of things to play in 2016.
And this is a sequel to Dig?
No, set in the same universe, completely different gameplay style.
Okay, right. But it is within the same
it's kind
characters.
Of what, apparently, it's like a real-time strategy. Not real-time strategy. What would you call like a XCOM or that kind of thing? That's a strategy game, right? Like, it's got.
I don't know. I've not played XCOM.
You take time and you play around. It's kind of it looks. It's like a 2D version of Codename Steam, but actually good from what I hear. So, take that with what you will.
Yeah. Moving along to our next category. Which, I can't remember what it is, Matthew. What is
best
our next category?
Original game.
Ooh, I how think, about that?
I think we're going to both have the same hue, possibly.
Possibly. I don't know. I'm. Go on, you go first.
No, you go first. It's your
Splatoon.
Turn. No, actually, I went with Super Mario Maker.
I thought you would. I was. Super Mario Maker is also there, but I thought Splatoon edged it because it was the game that made me think, whoa, I wouldn't have thought of that. That works so well together. How do all these things manage to come together that have never been done before? What a great new original concept for a game.
Yes.
Whereas the concept of Mario Maker is to build Mario levels, which I kind of is a great thing because it's not a game that doesn't exist, a purely level building game. I mean, Little Big Planet has its own.
But I would argue that this is the first game to do it right.
That's a very good point.
It is so simple. Like, I mean, think about how many games you've ever owned that have had level builders or track builders and stuff.
I will mention this game again.
Okay.
That's maybe why it didn't get mentioned.
Okay, fair enough.
You'll have to convince me it's a good game.
Okay, I'm glad we're in agreement, but like, for those of you at home who haven't got a Wii U, honestly, like, in the coming months, if Wii U start to drop in price, you should really pick up a Wii U, if not only to experience great games like Splatoon and Yoshi's Woolly World, but Mario Maker
you
is.
You could
in
say
the
that Mario Maker
makes the Wii U.
Because there's nothing else like it, nothing else that's been done as well, as you say.
I've never watched people play levels of games in this kind of way. Like, I mean, it was Nintendo taking on this whole, like, ROM hack phenomenon of people, like, making their own Mario ROM hacks and changing the levels and stuff, and then making that in a way that people can play and do. I mean, it's not perfect. I mean, some of the course selection things that now they've tried to fix by making them browser-based and having a catalogue of courses you can search and stuff is okay.
I think it's very intuitive.
Yes, but the gameplay itself is very intuitive.
Yeah, and also I think the menu systems are quite intuitive on the whole. You know, you kind of know where you have to go. It's logical.
Yes.
Yeah, which, you know, with a game like that, you've got to get that right, otherwise you're screwed. And it's a big part of what makes it such an easy and pleasurable experience.
Yes, it is 100%. I mean, but for Splatoon is a fantastic game. I mean,
it's that idea of the depth of strategy. At first, it's a deceptively simple game, but it's how you use the abilities of your character to get advantage. You know, I'm still not an expert at Splatoon, but I can see, because also it doesn't. What was I going to say? Like, it's very accessible.
Yeah.
For one, but it has got that depth to it.
I mean. Yeah. Leave it to Nintendo to take a concept like a multiplayer shooting game and reinvent it, but not only that, but to make it kid-friendly at the same time. They're taking this very, you're running around shooting people and killing them essentially, but it doesn't feel like that. It's not got that edge.
That's not the main incentive. The main incentive is to cover the arena.
To cover the area in paint. It's like, hey, you can kill these people if you want, but like that doesn't do anything. Like that gives you kills and it gives you points, but it doesn't give you as many points as doing this, and it kind of takes the onus and focus away from that. In a way that's very clever and very Nintendo.
So, and very original.
Yes, and very original. That's I would agree with you. I don't disagree. Vote.
And the next one is best multiplayer. What you got, Matt?
Splatoon.
I wondered if you might have Splatoon. You see, yeah, that's a good vote.
For all of the reasons I just said.
I admire Splatoon's originality and its gameplay, although it is not a multiplayer game that I keep coming back to on a weekly basis.
Admittedly, there is this, but yeah. I mean, of all of the multiplayer games I have played this year, be that a bit of Metal Gear Online, which I wasn't really that taken with.
Because it's a little bit flawed in places in terms of the lobby system on it, and how I think you can't swap weapons without leaving the lobby.
No, you can't.
Yeah. It doesn't break. It isn't a game breaker or anything, but it is a little bit of a disappointment.
I'm just trying to think of other things I've played this year. I mean, like Battlefront. Battlefront should have. It's a fucking Star Wars game made by DICE.
It should have been the best multiplayer of the year.
It should have been an absolutely amazing multiplayer game. Like, after all the times I've like slagged off and then made my peace with Battlefield, like Battlefield 4 is such a fucking good game in comparison to Battlefront.
Yeah.
And like, regular listeners of the podcast will know my beef with that game. But I've come to terms with it. I quite enjoy playing it a little bit now because it's now at a level 2.5 years after it came out where it's solid and you can play it quite easily and you can have a laugh doing it. Splatoon is a game that, despite me not playing it as much because I played it non-stop until that level cap was 20, I got to 20 pretty much straight away. I just sat here and played it a lot.
Because it's very addictive.
It is. It's a one more go type game. Yeah. You play it and you're like, shit, I can play another game. I can play another game. I can play another game.
Because the rounds are so short, really. Yeah. Each match is very short.
I dropped off it in a big bad way, but I mean, it's a game I really want to go back to, and I'm totally up for them making another one or another few if it becomes a franchise in itself, because it's such a good game. I really enjoyed it, and I'm interested to see where they can take that idea. But for me, multiplayer-wise, like, there's nothing I've played that's come out this year. I mean, like, Siege looked bollocks. I didn't really care about COD. Like, Battlefront, as I said, was a huge disappointment, and most people I know have played it. So as a result of that, I really liked Rocket League, but it has to go as Splatoon.
Yeah, it's such a standout game of the year because it does so many things differently. It does stand out amongst everything else, Splatoon. I just think of it, the colourful visuals in my head, and I think, this is Nintendo, but also feels a bit Sega. Feels very classic. What a video game to me is nostalgic.
Yes.
Yeah, it is the embodiment of classic video gaming and originality. And
yeah,
there's a lot to be said about it. But I didn't pick it for my best multiplayer game.
I assumed you didn't.
I picked a game which is, even though it is original in its own way, it's not quite.
You better
quite
not have picked what I think you're
It's not
pick.
Quite as original as a Splatoon. And I've picked a game which I can't put down when I start playing it in multiplayer. And that game is Devil's Third.
Oh, shit.
And I'm not saying this just to be controversial and kind of support the underdog. Not at all, because I actually am very impressed by the multiplayer. And it is actually, you see, it's quite similar to Call of Duty. It's the same kind of thrill I get from playing Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Yet it does have an extra layer of originality to it. And this comes in the form of the close combat.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can play it like Call of Duty from a distance and shoot people. Although it is from a third-person perspective. But when you get in close, you can start into these sword fights. And if you're good at it, there is a lot of depth to these sword fights. Because sometimes if you just go up high and you slash them to bits and that's it.
Yeah.
But if they start blocking and then you start rolling and blocking and rolling, and they can be very satisfying little battles.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, someone can just come up behind you and shoot you while you're doing this. It would be nice if you could kind of close yourself off in these instances and have your little battle with someone and not be shot by someone else. And one of the flaws of it is that there's a lot of people in a match at one time. I found playing it online when there's less people, it's yeah. actually a more satisfying experience.
Okay.
But it does a lot in multiplayer. In fact, I think the attention to the multiplayer is where the real focus of the game seems to have been. Because not only do you get the deathmatch, there's team deathmatch, of course, but there's other modes which are very original. Unfortunately, I can't play them because nobody's playing them online. Yeah. The only game people playing online is the deathmatch, and which is what I'm basing this praise on, is how yeah. good that mode actually is. But I have to think that the team deathmatch is probably a lot more enjoyable because it's less of a mess than
deathmatch yeah.
can be. But it's a very satisfying, enjoyable mess. Another big thing about it is the jumping. You can jump ridiculously high. It's kind of like, think about Crackdown.
Yeah.
And the ease of movement around there, running up walls and such. You feel very cool doing these kills. And what they've managed to achieve in a game like this is create an acrobatic multiplayer shooter.
Yeah.
The likes of which I've never played before. It has a sense of humour.
Yeah.
As well, which is nice. It's very bloody, very over the top.
Yeah.
Which adds to its comedy. You know, don't take this game seriously.
Of course not.
It does have its flaws, such as the if you want to get items to customise your character, and the look of your character at least, you
yeah.
pay this in-game currency called Golden Eggs. And you do get them at certain instances within the multiplayer playing through it. For example, you get bonuses for consecutive days that you play the game on.
Yeah.
But, you can also do in-game transactions with real money to get these eggs. And a lot of things cost a lot of eggs.
Yeah.
So I don't really approve of that way of doing it. I would prefer the content to be more accessible and not rely on me having to put more money into a game, which probably won't have a following for
very
that
long
because yeah. it's been critically panned. But what the critics who review the game always say is a multiplayer is very enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's quite simple. It's not the best looking game in the world. But when the gameplay is as good as it is, I play it every week with Gareth, my friend, online. And even though he talks about the frustrations of it at times, he keeps playing it. And I keep playing it.
Yeah.
And we keep having a barrel load of fun. So it is flawed, but it is immensely enjoyable and in its own way quite original at the same time. I've never played anything quite like Devil Third.
Yeah.
So that's why it gets my multiplayer game of the year.
Okay, fair enough. This should be best story.
Oh yeah, are we on that already?
We are already.
We've mowed through these.
We have. But I mean, we've been doing this podcast now just over half hour, so.
Yeah. On best story.
I'll give it to you first because I still haven't really decided.
I'm going to say Roundabout.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, if you're going to...
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
Actually, it is quite sweet. There's a genuine romance between two characters, and they have two female characters, actually.
Yeah.
Which is quite unique within a video game. But you actually feel for these characters, maybe because they're played by real actors, and you kind of get attached to them. And every town you go to, you're picking up the similar people. Actually, the same people in some instances. And the characters grow and the relationships. It's not the most in-depth storyline ever. But as you drive off into the sunset at the end of Roundabout, you feel like you've enjoyed a story. And I got something from it.
Yeah.
It's the only game I've completed this year. It's the only story I've seen from the beginning to the end. So, as I say... We were not going to have this category until I realised that I had actually enjoyed a game story this year. That's why I mention it. I'm sure there's much better game stories out there, but this one, its own little way, affected me.
I've played a few games this year. Like, I mean, I've beaten Assassin's Creed Syndicate quite recently. Story in that's okay. It's an Assassin's Creed story. It kind of gets in its own way with all of the, like, the kind of the Desmond Miles equivalent things in this story, kind of like, why didn't you just let me play through the story? This is more interesting than this stuff. But I think I have to give it to LEGO Dimensions.
Well, yeah. Okay.
I think, full disclosure, I have worked on parts of this game, but I...
You didn't write the story.
I didn't write the story. I didn't make the game.
No.
I think... Narratively, okay, like, it's not a groundbreaking story of, like, oh, God, there's someone doing something bad. But, I mean, I specifically want to focus on the portal bit and the Doctor Who bit of the story.
Okay.
Because it feels like there's a Portal 3 in there. Even though it isn't written by Valve, even though it isn't sanctioned, even though it's considered canon, it feels very Portal in a way that I really like Portal, and I was very surprised to see how Portal it was and how snarky GLaDOS was to Shell and all of these kind of things. And some of the Doctor Who moments, there's a bit where you're playing in just like the regular games content because it touches all of the IPs that are within it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Doctor Who bit where there's Weeping Angels. It's probably one of the most tense moments in any game I've ever played, just because they come into the story and the lights are flickering on and off, and like the Weeping Angels are getting closer to you as you're moving these objects. But like the Portal 3 bit of it for me, like I know this is just a quick like slapdash category as far as this awards is concerned. I mean, it's not like we're giving out trophies anyway, but I really like that game story, and I specifically like the Portal stuff. And I think if you are a fan of Portal and you can find the game on the cheap, then have a look, because the Portal stuff in there is brilliant.
Is it in the game as standard, or you have to buy an add-on?
There is Portal stuff in the game as standard, which is very good. However, there is like a 2 hours worth of content that you can purchase separately and play alongside the game that is, like I said, probably as close to Portal 3 as I think we're probably ever going to get. So,
yeah. It was a bit of a cop out for me, this category. So
I'm not going to write it in the description. It'll just be part of the
It's the Easter egg, yes. A bonus feature,
surprise.
And I'm afraid our next category is also a bit of a cop out for me, because I've only really played one portable game that was released this year.
Okay,
I think properly played.
Yeah,
and that's Majora's Mask. So I really,
I don't think you're that far off there.
It's a great game.
I think they've done a lot to it. I think they've made some things with that game a lot better and a lot more user-friendly. I don't think that's a cop-out at all.
I actually agree. It's just a shame I've got nothing to compare it to. I did play a Vita game called Torkoal, which was quite a good puzzle platform game. I can't remember if it was released in this last year, and I've not been able to spend a lot of time with it. So Majora's Mask, I sat there, I was actually during, my girlfriend was at a band practice, and I was kind of sitting, enjoying the music and amusing myself, and I was playing Majora's Mask, and I was as sucked in on the 3DS as I was when I originally played it on the N64. It's a smashing portable game. It's taken a big old console game and stuck it on a portable. And yet it doesn't lessen the experience.
I would argue it makes it better.
And it does improve things. So
I think it's great. I haven't beaten the entire game. I got pretty far into it, but I'm a sucker with that game. I like collecting all of the masks and getting the fierce deity. Mm. So I started doing stuff, and then I was like, no, I need to put this down and play some other games.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't play it. I picked up Ziplash, Chibi Robo game. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to play that. My portable game of the year actually goes to Box Boy.
I thought it might. That should have been on my coulda woulda shudders as well.
Box Boy is a game by HAL Labs. I've previously mentioned it on the podcast, and it is a delight. It is such a charming little puzzle platformer. It is just proof of why I love HAL games. HAL Laboratories are just, they just make some of the best games.
The concept of Box Boy, how does it work exactly?
Essentially, you are this character called Box Boy, and then you can use yourself to like stack blocks. Mm. Essentially, you have a limited amount of blocks.
I remember. They kind of extrude from you. To a certain, how many blocks can you extrude by?
I think it differs depending on the level. Okay. I think it also differs depending on the character, because later in the game you get some other characters in a Thomas Was Alone style way.
Yeah, I was starting to think Thomas Was Alone when you described it.
Different lengths of block and stuff, but I mean, like, you can put them horizontally or vertically, and then you can use them as stairs.
Similar to Thomas Was Alone?
No, not at all, because it's using a lot more puzzle techniques of not like, hey, you now use need to press this switch with the jumpy guy, you need to press this switch with the guy who can go through water. It's more focused on you solving puzzles with blocks.
More straightforward, would you say?
I would say so, yeah. It gets quite challenging in the later levels from what I've played a bit, but it's definitely like just a pick up and play. You can play a few minutes. There is a narrative running through it, but it's nothing like Thomas is Alone. There's not a narrated vision going on over the top.
Yeah, it's got quite a simplistic visual style as well, hasn't it?
Yes, but that's very works simplistic.
In its favor, would
it you definitely
say?
Does. Yeah. I mean, it is a pretty straightforward game, to be honest. Other notable
Some
mentions
of the best
for me was Puzzle and Dragons, the Super Mario one specifically, not the Z Puzzle and Dragons that comes with it, because it's two games on one cartridge. Yeah. I also played a lot of Mike Bethel's Volume on the Vita. However, it came out literally like 2 weeks before Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain, and it's very stealthy, and then there was just too much stealth for my brain to handle, so I got about halfway through that game. It's got a whopping 100 levels. It's a really
what are you playing
long
on,
game.
Volume?
I'm playing
Vita or PS4?
I was playing it on the Vita. I believe it's got a cross-save thing. I'm not too sure.
I think, has it only just been released on PS4? Or
no, it came out around the same time as Metal Gear Solid. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was I believe it actually may have come out on the PS4 first. I'm not sure if it came out at the same time, but I noticed it was available for download when I turned on my Vita last to download Fez, and I was like, oh, great, I'll play some of this on there as well. Ooh. Good game. Right then, Tom.
This is it, the best console game of the year.
Oh, man, this is a pain in the arse of a category.
If you were to think about what we've already mentioned in the podcast, you may go out and say, oh, it was Splatoon.
Perhaps.
But actually, my console game of the year is Mario Maker, for the reasons we've already discussed. So I don't know if there's much need to go in too much more detail about how good Mario Maker is.
Defend it over Splatoon.
Defend it over Splatoon.
Why do you prefer Mario Maker to Splatoon?
It's creative. I think the possibilities of the gameplay are so endless, the variety of the gameplay, although as good as a concept as Splatoon is and as amazing as the original as it is, and every bit of the presentation is fantastic, the possibilities of Mario Maker for gameplay are just so far out that it has to be my game of the year. And it is, again, the fact of how easy it is to create the levels. How Nintendo have created a fantastic game with a lot of gameplay and a lot of really well-done creative tools. I don't know if I summed up that very well at all, but Mario Maker stands above everything for me this year.
Right. So I wrote down, first of all, or at least I was going to write down Mario Maker. I then thought, it's probably Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain, because, I mean, I've not really felt that compelled to come back home, sit down in front of a television for a few hours at a time and plug through a game.
Yeah,
I have massive problems with it in some areas. And that's what made me think, well, I may have dropped off Splatoon, but I really fucking enjoyed Splatoon. Like, I really loved both the story, the campaign of it, and the multiplayer.
Yeah, that was something we didn't mention, was actually how good the campaign actually
is. That game is fucking brilliant. Some of the boss fights are awesome too.
Yeah, some of the ideas actually within the more puzzly elements of the campaign and getting from A to B are also quite clever.
Then I crossed it out again and I put Metal Gear Solid 5 for Phantom Pain. Right then.
Can I just mention again about Mario Maker? Something I never touched on, which is actually a massive part of the experience, is sharing the levels with friends.
Yes, it is.
It's not very easy to do so, because you have to...
No, I talked about that earlier in the podcast.
Yeah,
it could be more intuitive.
Yeah. But
it's easier now, though.
It
fixed
is
it.
Very, very, very rewarding when you can play through a level someone else has made and experience, wow, that was really good, that was really clever. Oh, how we did that. It can inspire you to make your own levels. And then you get feedback of people saying, I really enjoyed your level. It was really creative. And that's a feeling which is great to get, you know. And if a video game can give you that kind of such accessible creativity and, I'd like to say that is also a big factor why it's such a good game.
Okay. Cool and the gang.
Yeah. You were saying, Matthew.
Metal Gear Solid 5. Right then. I kind of give it this begrudgingly, because I kind of had the same thing with Assassin's Creed Syndicate, where I really wanted to play through it and I really wanted to beat it. However, with Assassin's Creed Syndicate, there are some very cool things in there. I think by the time I was finished with it, I was glad to be finished with it. Whereas Metal Gear Solid, I still haven't deleted it off of my PlayStation 4. because I still live in hope. I know how astronomically insane and unlikely there ever will be, but I want more Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. And I can't bring myself to delete it. And that says something, because like Watch Dogs was done, I deleted it. Black Flag was done, I deleted it.
So you can continue with the game though, can't you?
You can. There's stuff you can do in it. You can play like side ops and all of this other stuff. I don't care. I just want more of that
story or
experience. Yeah. I want more of playing through that game. I want to just walk into a field and Fulton horses. I want to ride around. I want to go into a toilet and play an audio tape of me, of a soldier having diarrhea so I don't get discovered. I want to run around and throw nonsensey fists that have the bionic man, fucking like a $6 million man sound effect as I punch people. I want to fire my rocket fist at people more. I'm not quite ready to give that game up, and that, to me, is what says that's my game of the year. Because
there we have it.
I'm going to play more Mario Maker. Mario Maker could also have potentially have been on my coulda, shoulda, woulda played thing, because, I mean, I don't feel I played enough of Mario Maker, but, I mean, playing Mario Maker is experiencing other things.
I'm just so glad it exists. I'm so happy Nintendo made that game.
Likewise. 100% agree with you.
What a great idea.
But for me, like, Metal Gear Solid 5, like, despite its flaws in its narrative and despite how the second half of that game kind of feels like it was a bit rushed, it just kind of goes to show that Hideo Kojima is a bit of a genius. And I know that's a term that gets thrown around with that man a lot, and sometimes I would question it. But, like, you look at that game and you look at the people he surrounded himself with and you look at the depth and just how much shit you can do in that game. Like, that is how to make an open world game. That is the best open world in any game. Like, it's not even got that much stuff there. It's not like it's a world full of possibilities. You are literally in, like, wasteland. You're in a desert. And it still manages to be massively entertaining. Like, it's got some of the best characters in the game, in a video game this year. Quiet is a fantastic character. Ocelot is brilliant in it. It's such a good game.
It has a level of Metal Gear games, always a level of quality to the games of, I always feel, struggle to reach that level.
I mean, first games to be made with a constant 60 frames per second for the PS2, something else no one else really managed on that console, or at least not widely spread throughout the industry. I think it's this weird fringe type of game that is like, this is if you had infinite money and infinite time to make a game. These are the kind of games people could make.
I could compare it to a deluxe brand of something.
Yes.
It feels like it's a game, but it's a deluxe game. It's a Tesco's finest.
Yeah, it is.
It goes above and beyond the level of just satisfying your hunger.
Yes, it does.
It puts a cherry on top. I'm not going to do any more food analogies.
I'm sad that it's probably the last time we will ever get to play as Snake. I'm sad that it's the last Metal Gear game I won't give any spoilers on anything.
Where Hideo Kojima goes now in his journey of creating video games.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But
let's see.
If he can ever replicate that quality again, is this his opus? Is this his best experience he can deliver? Because will he ever have the time and money to do something like this again? Will he ever be within such a major publisher that he is allowed to do this? Will this Sony deal mean that he's got to pretty much work on a game as quickly as he can? I mean, Street Fighter V, like, if you look at the time between Street Fighter 3 and Street Fighter 4, that was fucking years. Street Fighter 5 is like, doesn't feel that long.
Yeah, I don't know if... I think he might be in a good position with Sony, based on Shenmue as well. They seem to be able to take their time with that game. It's not coming out till the end of 17 or something?
Yeah, I think so.
And then you've got Final Fantasy 7 as well. You know, seem to be putting a bit into that. I don't know.
I don't know. They're making it episodic.
There is that, but maybe they have their reasons.
I think that's more Square, though, than Sony, in their defense. I'm curious to see where he goes from here, but for me, Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain, for reasons I've already described, just the overall gameplay. Story is as wacky as you kind of expect from some bits of Metal Gear, but it's also very serious as well. It feels like a different game tonally. It's
sophisticated.
It is a very sophisticated game. I totally agree with your idea that it is like a premium branded game, and that's why it's my game of the year for 2015.
Yeah, worth every penny.
Agreed.
But that's it. That's our game of the war. Game of awards.
Game it's of awards.
Our game of
man. I'd watch Game of Awards.
I hope you've enjoyed that. I mean, there's plenty of games which I haven't had the chance to play this year.
Agreed. Same.
I mean, I've plenty of games I actually own that I haven't had a chance to play. I picked up Project Zero as well.
Likewise.
Maiden of Dark Water for the Wii U. I haven't had time to play that. I got a Rhodey the Sky Soldier as a gift. I started playing Halo 5, which I was impressed by. Really been enjoying Forza 6 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few. And Rare Replay was great to see this last year as well. Project Cars. Played a bit of Kirby Rainbow Curse. So, Iron Bread. There's a few of them that I really need to go back to, and there's a few that I really need to get that I missed out on. So I've just been able to talk about the games I have played and I have enjoyed and compare those ones. So that's what you're getting from me in this show.
So Tom, 2016, we are now in it.
Wow.
If you would like to give what you think could potentially be your game of the year for 2016 on what you know is coming out this
year.
Well,
there's a new Worms game coming out I'm quite excited about, being a fan of the franchise. I've seen footage of the Ratchet and Clank game, and I think that looks really great. Star Fox is out.
Yeah.
Zelda's out.
Street Fighter V's out, Tom.
Street Fighter V is also released this year. Shenmue, as I said, isn't out till next year.
Gears of War 4.
It could be exciting. Maybe
Uncharted
Gears.
Uncharted 4.
Maybe there's going to be a Sonic game this year. Don't know if it'll ever get Game of the Year, but I'm interested to see where Sonic goes next.
Did they delay that other 3DS Sonic Boom game?
Yeah, it's delayed. It's coming out this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's already out in the States.
See if it's any good. I mean, that Horizon game is coming up from Gorilla, which I'm quite curious about.
Oh.
With the crazy, Horizon like, Dawn. Astro dinosaur things.
There's...
Last Guardian is apparently slated for 16.
Recore
is out this year.
Could be really good.
Recore is written by someone who wrote a game that I really liked, and I can't think of what it is, and I was like, shit.
Isn't it the Mega Man dude who's...
It is
Inafune?
Inafune's company made the idea pitch. It's retro making the game.
Of Metroid fame.
Of Metroid Prime fame, and also Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze. Yeah. However, the guy who was writing the story of that game wrote something that I really fucking loved. Mirror's Edge Catalyst is also out this year. 2016 is also the year of VR. The Oculus Rift will be released. Possibly Project Morpheus.
Console.
The NX may be announced.
It probably won't come out this year, but
I don't know. You never know.
Be announced.
I mean, like, you look on the horizon. I mean, Star Fox is the only game that's coming out on the Wii U this year that we know of. Possibly Zelda as well, but I mean, they've been pretty shtum about that too.
Yeah, the Wii U seems to be dying down in terms of its releases. It has been dying down for a while.
Yeah.
If Nintendo want to keep releasing new games this year, they're going to need to announce something soon.
They're going to, yeah. Jughead is also out, or Cuphead, sorry, is out this year.
Thanks.
You are looking forward to...
I own Xbox One now, so I can definitely enjoy that one. I've heard it's hard as hell, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is the writer? I just want to end off my... Oh, yeah, it's written by the guy who wrote Halo and Destiny.
Okay. That should be interesting.
Yeah, Joseph Staten, co-creator of Halo and Destiny universes, is the guy writing Recore. Yeah, of those, what do you think is going to be potentially your game of the year 2016? I know, obviously, this is going to come as surprises.
So difficult to say at this point. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I can't answer that question right now because I know so little about some of them, but so intrigued by Recore and Horizon Dawn.
Below as well, I've also been keeping my eye on by Capybara.
What am I looking forward to most? I really want to experience Cuphead. Star Fox could actually really surprise me how good it is.
I'm hoping them taking all of this extra time to make it has made the control more suitable towards that game, because from what I've heard of people in press who've played it and talked about it on podcasts, they weren't really that impressed by the controller and how it controls.
If Zelda really delivers, then Zelda could perhaps...
If Zelda is the Zelda I hope it is, and a lot of people are with this open world, then I'm behind Zelda being my game of the year.
That's... Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm more familiar with Zelda than some of the newer franchises, so my safe bet is Zelda. But I'd like to think one of the other ones will come from, you know, surprise me.
My safe bet is Zelda... My slightly out there bet is Horizon.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game. I don't like Killzone. I've not really liked anything else Guerrilla's put out.
It's quite different.
But that world intrigues me, and I'm a sucker for a good third-person action game.
What Killzone did, I remember when that first came out, is... Actually, no, let's say Killzone 2 and 3, you know, visually, wow, you know? I think Horizon Dawn is going to be a very visually astounding game. Hey, the game we forgot about, No Man's Sky.
Oh, shit. How did we forget No Man's... Yes, that was the whole reason because I brought up this category.
Because it's been so long, I think. It's man. Kind of faded into...
Hyperlight Drifter as well is on my list of things I hope are absolutely amazing games this year.
We've been told that No Man's Sky is going to be amazing.
Oh shit, actually no, I forgot my definite, I hope 100% is going to be my game of the year, and I will find out at the end of the month, is The Witness by Jonathan Blow.
Oh yeah.
I've been looking forward to that game for fucking years. I can't wait to finally play it. I think it's going to be a good game to play through with the missus as well, because it's very puzzle focused and she is very puzzle focused as well. So I think that's going to be a good gaming experience for the both of us.
Mm.
Yeah, I think this year, I think we should also start maybe 2016's Game of the Year with our best 2015 Game of the Year. I mean, I think your 2014 Game of the Year perhaps might have been Pokemon Ruby, from what you were saying.
I really like Pokemon Ruby.
Yeah. I completed Black Flag finally, even though I think that was 13. Shit, that would have been my 2013 Game of the Year.
Yeah. I don't know if I would go as far as saying Pokemon could ever be my Game of the Year. I just really like playing Pokemon games.
Yeah, I just started playing Yo-Kai Watch, which isn't technically out in Europe yet, so could technically be my Game of the Year for 16.
Can you remember what your Game of the Year was in last podcast?
I didn't have one.
You didn't have one? Yes, sorry. We'll go back to 360 to the beginning of this.
Yeah, through Caution of the Wind and said I didn't have one.
And did I say Mario Kart 8?
You did.
Right, yeah. That's fair enough. I'm still playing Mario Kart 8 now, so that goes without saying.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I think that brings us to the end of the Game of the Year podcast. I hope you've all enjoyed listening. Some of you may be first-time listeners, because I'm going to spam the shit out of this podcast through every channel I possibly can to get some new listeners on board for 16. And if you are one of those people, you should go listen to this in another place that you're not listening to it now. If you're on tomandmattattack.com/podcast, you can go over to blastprocess.com, or you can go over to iTunes, where if you are a first-time listener, you should probably rate and subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. You can find us on Twitter at TMAcast. One of my New Year's resolutions for 2016 is to do a bit more with that Twitter. I will also do some more stuff with Facebook, which is facebook.com/tomandmattattack, which I think if you want to message us or get in contact, is probably the best place, because
we're
slaves
to
Facebook and we're both access to it. Okay.
Yeah, and let us know what if you agree, disagree with any of our choices. I hope actually some of these games maybe you'll try out on our recommendation. Maybe there'll be things you haven't played that
I think we had a pretty safe list, to
we
be
did.
Honest.
I don't
know
if I'm people to play Roundabout.
No, I'm gonna go download it now actually, because I'm interested to see what it's like. But yeah, I think that brings us to the end of a very fucking good year in gaming. Like, there are countless ones that I could have put on this list for a lot of these categories.
I think
best
Nintendo
digital,
have come out very well.
I think that the Wii U has probably had the best releases this year of any of the consoles. I mean, the PlayStation 4 has had some very strong releases, as is the Xbox One, with things like Halo 5 Guardians. And
which is very good. I like it better than Halo 4.
Yeah. So, you know... 2016, onwards and upwards for video games. It's been an amazing game year. I hope 16 can be better. From the looks of some of those titles we just read out, it potentially can be. Okay. And I guess that is goodbye from us, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks again for listening.
You have had a fantastic 2015, and your 16 is just as good, if not better, like we wish for gaming. Game on.
Game on.